Welcome to this episode of She Talks Tech. I am honoured to have in the lounge today Jamie Smith-Webb, who's the VP of Engineering at Funding Circle. So throughout this conversation, we're going to talk about male allyship, how we foster inclusion, and how we develop the careers of women in tech. So Jamie, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about your background in tech and your current role.
Sure. So my background in tech goes quite far back, actually, to, I guess, when I was a kid. I grew up in Scotland, had an older brother, and I'm going to show my age now a little bit, but the first experience I had of tech was programming on the ZX Spectrum, which was probably late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, quite some time ago. I remember creating this little spider program that jumped across the screen, and that was kind of my first foray into technology. And from there, just got more and more interested at school. I had a great computing teacher. He was fantastic. Learned that I could do computing at Glasgow Uni. So did that for 4 years and then came down to the Bright Lights of London about 18 or so years ago, working for a big bank, and worked in all manner of different bits and pieces from then. So did large scale sort of financial trading systems, wealth management systems, did a bit of real, very small software company trading programs there as well, working directly with traders in the city of London. That was fun. Worked my way up at that company to start looking after teams a bit more than doing the program myself.
Yep.
So now a Funding Circle after quite a number of teams, and that's kind of my route to figuring out the difference between being an individual contributor, like the person on the keyboard doing the work, which I've always loved and still do, to helping teams and helping engineers do the same. So that's where I am at the moment, VP of Engineering at Funding Circle, helping a ton of teams develop software for small businesses.
So that's quite a transition, and I'm going to kind of go off questions a sec, but, you know, I think a lot of people struggle with that, moving from a technical role where you're very kind of hands-on to actually being in a more strategic role where you don't actually feel you're doing nothing, but you're contributing to the wider picture. Did you feel like that?
Oh, massively. I think I was having this conversation the other day, actually, with a kind of more junior engineering manager, and they're asking me this question, like, how do you make the transition? I think the biggest difference for me, there's two things I would say that I found tough. One, people treat you differently when you have the title manager in a room, even like the day before, if you're in a room with a whiteboard designing something and you ask the question, why don't we do it this way? As a manager, people take that as perhaps he meant we should do it that way. Yeah. So you have to be very careful about how you kind of express your opinion. And the other one is the feedback loop. I think as an engineer, you create something, you can see it work almost instantly, and you kind of figure out whether it's the right thing or not. As a manager and developing teams, the feedback loop's much longer. So being sure you've made the right decisions can take weeks, sometimes months, sometimes years to see if you've made the right call and if you're doing the right thing.
And that can be quite frustrating, isn't it? Because as you're quite right, when you're that individual contributor, especially from an engineering perspective, it's just bang, 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 does it work?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, when you're in that more kind of leadership role, it's a decision that could, as you quite rightly say, evolve over years.
Yeah. It's quite tough. And getting that almost like patience takes a long time. I'm still working on it. It takes you a long time to figure out like how you do that.
Work in progress.
Yeah, definitely.
So in your career, I mean, obviously we've all kind of had help from different individuals, how we term them is kind of, you know, up to us. But to use the word mentor, have you had lots of mentors in your career? And if so, kind of how have you nurtured that relationship and how's that worked for you?
So yeah, I've had mentors almost throughout my entire career, mentors or coaches. My first mentor, it was a program when I worked for the Bank of New York Mellon. I kind of got asked to join this program and they set me up with a really senior sales and marketing executive. And I had no idea what to expect. I thought this is maybe going to not quite be the right thing for me. Like, I don't know anything about sales and marketing. I don't really know how to talk to an executive. But their interaction with me really helped me understand the kind of wider people call them soft skills. I would call them kind of power skills, maybe, of like how to like think about your interactions with people, how to kind of manage your curiosity and foster that kind of thing. That was great. And then, yeah, from then I've had informal and formal mentors and coaches. I've got an excellent coach at the moment for the last couple of years who's much more specialized in technical leadership. That's really helped me the last couple of years. But before that, I had much more general mentors and coaches who kind of developed my way of thinking, allowed me to, I'd say kind of allowed me to be myself. I think that's kind of the greatest kind of achievement I've had from that.
I think that's really important, isn't it? You know, to allow yourself to be authentic.
Yeah.
And I think also with coaches, you know, people often get confused between a mentor and a coach. And I always kind of see it like, you know, the mentor's there to kind of, you know, give you the benefit of their experience, whereas the coach is there to kind of question you a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because invariably we have the right answers, don't we? We just sometimes can't find a way to articulate them.
Yeah.
Do you pay that forward, you know, that mentoring? Have you mentored other individuals?
Yeah, I have. Pretty much throughout my career as well. More recently at Funding Circle, about a year or so ago, I was mentoring one of our team. And the relationship the other way around is really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
I probably arguably got more for being a mentor than a mentee.
Yep.
Because I think you learn both ways. They teach you quite a lot about how to see the world, and you get to kind of help them and see them progress as well.
Absolutely. I think it's always interesting when you're mentoring other individuals that you get to see life through their lens.
Yeah.
As a leader, that's something that's really, really important, that we look at a multitude of lenses. So on that note, you know, we talk about inclusion and we talk about diversity. How important is that for you when running a large engineering team, that you have that diversity of people and diversity of thought within that team?
It's really interesting, actually, because I've not struggled, but I've found it so odd at times that diversity has been almost questioned or debated quite a lot in terms of teams, because we don't question diversity in other walks of life. You know, in investing, for example, that's why I spend a lot of time in finance. The diversity of a portfolio is really important.
Yeah.
To be sure that you kind of you can see all the benefits from all the diversity of financial instruments you get, and the same with like diet and exercise, diversity is really important.
Yeah.
So when it comes to teams, for me, I've always assumed diversity and been at odds when I've not seen it. And I think maybe through that lens, it's allowed me to see a little bit more about what we've lacked, rather than almost like trying to debate the benefits of. And so what I've seen when you bring the kind of diverse groups of people together is you just get different perspectives. You get the quality of questions goes up.
Yep.
So if you've got different backgrounds in the room, the way people frame their questions, the kind of questions they ask is vastly different. No one's trying to prove that they know more about one particular way of thinking than another. Everyone brings something completely different to the table. So there's less of that kind of toxic, negative kind of performance culture, I would say. That's one thing that kind of disappears. The way to think about problem changes, I've been in rooms so often when, so for example, we've had career change. People join our teams who have gone through a boot camp.
Yeah.
Obviously some of them have been female, and when they've joined the team, the way in which they see the problem and the kind of restating of, well, this is what you've said, but I see it like this.
Yeah.
It's been massively beneficial, and the whole team will stop and pause to think about that way of seeing the problem.
Yeah.
I think the approach shifts as well. An ability to be almost free to experiment. Again, going back to, if you get the same type of individual, the same background, they're all kind of competing on the same dimension, and risk taking goes down a little bit, and people are a little bit afraid of failure. Whereas in a more diverse team, it creates this bond where you're looking all together at the problem, and you know you all bring something completely different. And that helps to create this sort of curious attitude amongst the team. So I think those are the things I'd probably point to most.
Yeah. Because obviously, you know, you have all people from the same background, studied the same way, you know, you end up in a groupthink scenario, which isn't necessarily innovative.
No.
So how do you foster that inclusion? Because it's all well and good, you know, and kind of see this with a lot of companies, they hire a diverse team, but then the individuals get there and they don't feel included. So, you know, how have you fostered kind of inclusion at Funded Circle and within your teams?
So I think you touched on one bit there, which is being sure in the first place that we have a diverse view of our teams and understanding that when we don't have that, there's something up with a group. But going past that, I think there's probably two main bits, maybe three main bits, I would say. One is, as a leader, not necessarily as a manager, but as a leader in a team, if you're kind of recognized as a leader, whether a technical leader or people leader, I think understanding what inclusion means in that context is really important. And that is only got through lots of asking questions, lots of trying to understand and lots of listening to the team to try and figure out what are the voices here? How do they operate? Who are those who are being quiet? Why are they being quiet? What forums are we debating in? What material or medium do we use and why? So just trying to get a sense of what does inclusion look like at this particular moment in this context. Yeah. Then I'd say there's probably two things. One is spotting anti-patterns. So a really classic one that I still see, unfortunately, quite often. In meetings, our male colleagues tend to be a little bit more comfortable cutting other people off, talking over others. And our female colleagues tend not to and get talked over. So spotting those patterns and bringing the conversation back and saying, sorry, I don't think she finished her point. Can we go back again and just finish what she was saying? So trying to spot those anti-patterns and really consciously and publicly addressing them.
Yeah.
And the last bit is, I would say it's kind of related in some ways, but exhibiting role model behaviors.
Yeah.
So things like asking questions in meetings is a really obvious one. Being certain that you've heard the input from people, recognizing when you've made a mistake. So again, a very, very common one. So a good example I like to use is where you have a meeting and you have a session where the material is available just in time. People join the meeting and it's a bit of a lively debate. At the end of the session, there's likely to be at least two or three, if not half the room, won't have included themselves in that meeting. They may be slightly more introverted, like to read material and write down their questions and send them out, and you've excluded them from the meeting. And so recognize when that happens and say, I think I've made a mistake here. I think I should have written this down. Why don't we pause the decision making for a minute? I'll send out the material, get an opportunity to ask questions, or we'll come back next week or in a few days. So I think exhibiting those role model behaviors to say, this is what I mean by inclusion, I think is really important.
I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And even thinking about it like that, you know, last minute, the fact that you've excluded those people that do like to take a bit of time to absorb information and work out what their questions are. And that a lot of what you said there also plays to a little bit like of kind of the male allyship piece, because clearing space for lesser voices in meetings and enable voices to be heard is a big piece of allyship. And it's one of the things that came out of a recent survey and some focus groups that we did at We Are Tech Women. So how else, you know, that's a prime example for me, but how else do you demonstrate that role model behavior and be a good male ally?
This one for me can be quite a difficult one, and I'll explain why. Because male allyship can tip into a little bit of privilege, a little bit of like men letting women at the table. I think that can be difficult to navigate sometimes. But I do think that other than the kind of the stuff we just mentioned, the other aspect I think I've probably touched on more or done more than I used to around allyship is being certain that I'm trying to represent or create space for representation in rooms where women aren't or they're not heard. And so that can come in tons of different ways, like kind of questioning if we have all the views. Do we actually have everything we need here to make a decision? Like, have we asked everyone? Has everyone inputted?
Yeah.
Things like performance reviews, promotion time decisions are classic places where it's largely people who sound and look like me in the room trying to figure out who we should promote and give different pay rises to, positions to. Just question the logic, obviously respectfully and transparently, but saying, it looks here we've got, I don't know, 8 promotions and 7 of them are men. Are we right? Have we thought about everybody? Have we looked at everybody here? So I think gently, openly, respectfully questioning and trying to open the opportunity for people to understand they've missed something. I think I put it that way.
Yeah.
In the rooms where without that, there wouldn't be a strong enough sense, strong enough voice.
So in terms of words of wisdom for other male senior leaders, you know, there's some great examples of there, you know, around, you know, looking around that room and saying, you know, have we got the right people in the room? If this, we make this decision, you know, have we not included people that would really be able to contribute to the decision? I think it's all great stuff. Is there anything else like words of wisdom, as I say, that you would give to perhaps male leaders that are listening to this and thinking, actually, I could do more?
Yeah, I think there's probably two things. One, maybe drawing my experience a bit, probably realize that you don't understand. That took me some time to figure out that I didn't actually understand at all what the views were, how it felt. Of course, I'm never going to really. And so I think recognizing that allows you to have a little bit of freedom to do two things. Ask tons of questions, seek feedback. The power I've got from my female colleagues asking, did I get that right? I think this looks wrong, or I'm worried about this. Am I off? I'm off here. I do it with my wife a lot. And kind of explain scenarios at work and say, here's my instinct here. What do you think? And the amount of excellent feedback I've got in those conversations to say, okay, I don't think you're thinking about this right, or here's how I would see that conversation from my point of view. And that allows a second thing, which is don't be, I guess, too proud to admit you've got it wrong. And some of the best conversations I've had, and certainly follow-up conversations where I've kind of said, I didn't get that right, I think. I thought this, and actually it's the other thing. And so if I'd known that then, if I thought about then, I would have done something differently. The amount of feedback I've got, people saying, thank you for saying that's really valuable, and here's actually where you specifically got it wrong, that's been huge. So I think just acknowledging that you're not going to understand it all, and it's okay. And that's not your role to understand everything, but it's on the role to seek understanding. I think that's the best words of wisdom I could give.
But we are all on a journey, right? A journey of educating ourselves. But I think one of the most wonderful things about kind of new leadership, if you want, is this focus on self-awareness. I mean, it's been around for years, but just that we're not finished products, and that we have a lot to do, but also the fact that we do the work for that.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't rely on other people to kind of educate us all the time. You know, we actually kind of go off and educate ourselves. So, I mean, obviously you've had a fantastic career. And so what are the kind of three top tips? If you just reflect back on that entire journey, what are the three top tips you would give to anyone listening that really feels like this is the year I'm going to drive my career forward? What would they be?
I think the one that has been most painful for me to learn, and the one that's kind of helped me most, is no one does it alone.
Yeah.
So find a kind of find your tribe, maybe put it that way.
Yeah.
And these days it's easier than ever to find people who you feel can expand you and kind of nurture you and push you in a good way. I went through parts of my career where I didn't do that. I thought, you know, I can do this. I've figured this
We've
out.
We've all had those moments. Yeah. I got this.
Exactly. And every single time I've done it, I've either burnt out, have had issues, or got it completely wrong and had to reset. So that's one. The second one, I think you just touched on a little bit, which is spend the time to figure out who you are. That's quite a grand thing. And I don't mean like what you want. I don't mean in that sense. So I spent quite a lot of time the last few years reflecting on why do I enjoy the things I enjoy? What are those things? What are the attributes of the stuff that I've enjoyed the most in life? What are those patterns? Why did those? So a big thing for me is belonging. I've loved it when I felt part of a team who've achieved something together. That's a real big thing, for a real big driver for me. So that has led me down my career. That's helped me identify opportunities I want to chase and those I don't. So yeah, to spend some time figuring out who you are, and a little kind of sub bit to that is coaches and mentors are great for that, especially coaches. Yeah. Fantastic, just to help you discover a little bit about who you already are. And the last one is a bit boring, but I think it's really important, is consistency. There's a lot made, I can sometimes get frustrated by this a little bit. There's a lot made of the kind of huge achievement, the big effort, and celebrating that one thing. But I've certainly found in my career, the times, and I'm not always consistent. I sometimes lose thread every now and again, and that's fine. But the times I've achieved the things I'm most proud of has been just consistent effort. Just being sure I do the important things almost daily, from checking in with my team, working with my colleagues, figuring out what we've got to do today, making sure I get done what's important. Just that consistency. I used to belittle it a little bit, but these days I pay attention to a lot more. But that just like daily consistency of getting stuff done.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there lies the consistency. You know, when you get to a certain level, I think you do find that. And I think, you know, even reflecting on what you've just said, I would have loved that earlier on in my career, rather than every day was a free for all.
Yeah, same. Well,
Jamie, it's been fantastic to speak to you. There were so many nuggets in that conversation, you know, for people to take away, you know. And again, you mentioned it earlier on, be wary of your privilege, you know, and making that transition into kind of technical role and what comes through of it. I love the thought of power skills and terming it in that way, and finding your tribe and being authentic and the consistency of your actions. So thank you so much for joining us. And if anyone wishes to find Jamie, you can find him on LinkedIn. And if you want to find out more about We Are Tech Women, you can visit our website. And Funding Circle are always hiring. So do go and check the Funding Circle website, or you can find some of their jobs available on We Are Tech Women too. Thank you for joining me, Jamie.
Thanks, Vanessa. Thanks so much.